17. "Jim," I said, "are those the Ewells sitting down yonder?" "Hush," said Jim. "Mr. Heck Tate's testifying." Mr. Tate had dressed for the occasion. He wore an ordinary business suit, which made him look somehow like every other man. Gone were his high boots, lumber jacket, and bullet-studded belt. From that moment, he ceased to terrify me. He was sitting forward in the witness chair, his hands clasped between his knees, listening attentively to the circuit solicitor. The solicitor, Mr. Gilmer, was not well known to us. He was from Abbotsville. We saw him only when court convened, and that rarely, for court was of no special interest to Jim and me. A balding, smooth-faced man, he could have been anywhere between 40 and 60. Although his back was to us, we knew he had a slight cast in one of his eyes, which he used to his advantage. He seemed to be looking at a person when he was actually doing nothing of the kind. Thus, he was hell on juries and witnesses. The jury, thinking themselves under close scrutiny, paid attention. So did the witnesses, thinking likewise. "In your own words, Mr. Tate," Mr. Gilmer was saying. "Well," said Mr. Tate, touching his glasses and speaking to his knees, "I was called. Could you say it to the jury, Mr. Tate?" "Thank you. Who called you?" Mr. Tate said, "I was fetched by Mr. Bob Ewell yonder, one night." "What night, sir?" Mr. Tate said, "It was the night of November 21st. I was just leaving my office to go home, and but Mr. Ewell came in. Very excited he was, and said, 'Get out to his house quick. Some niggard raped his girl.'"
"Did you go?"
"Certainly. Got in the car and went out as fast as I could."
"And what did you find?"
"Found her lying on the floor in the middle of the front room, one on the right as you go in. She was pretty well beat up, but I heaved her to her feet, and she washed her face in a bucket in the corner and said she was all right. I asked her who hurt her, and she said it was Tom Robinson."
Judge Taylor, who had been concentrating on his fingernails, looked up as if he were expecting an objection, but Atticus was quiet.
"Asked her if he beat her like that. She said yes, he had. Asked her if he took advantage of her, and she said yes, he did. So I went down to Robinson's house and brought him back. She identified him as the one, so I took him in. That's all there was to it."
"Thank you," said Mr. Gilmer. Judge Taylor said, "Any questions, Atticus?"
"Yes," said my father. He was sitting behind his table. His chair was skewed to one side. His legs were crossed, and one arm was resting on the back of his chair. "Did you call a doctor, Sheriff?"
"Did anybody call a doctor?"
asked Atticus.
"No, sir," said Mr. Tate.
"Didn't call a doctor?"
"No, sir," repeated Mr. Tate.
"Why not?"
There was an edge to Atticus's voice.
"Well, I can tell you why I didn't. Wasn't necessary, Mr. Finch. She was mighty banged up. Something show happened, it was obvious."
"But you didn't call a doctor. While you were there, did anyone send for one, fetch one, carry her to one?"
"No, sir."
Judge Taylor broke in.
"He's answered the question 3 times, Atticus. He didn't call a doctor."
Atticus said, "I just wanted to make sure, Judge." And the judge smiled.
Jim's hand, which was resting on the balcony rail, tightened around it. He drew in his breath suddenly. Glancing below, I saw no corresponding reaction and wondered if Jim was trying to be dramatic. Dill was watching peacefully, and so was Reverend Sykes beside him.
"What is it?"
I whispered and got a terse, "Shh!"
"Sheriff," Atticus was saying, "you say she was mighty banged up.
In what way?"
"Well, just describe her injuries, Heck." Well, she was beaten around the head. There was already bruises coming on her arms, and it happened about 30 minutes before. How do you know?
Mr. Tate grinned.
Sorry. That's what they said. Anyway, she was pretty bruised up when I got there, and she had a black eye coming.
Which eye? Mr. Tate blinked and ran his hands through his hair.
Let's see, he said softly. Then he looked at Atticus as if he considered the question childish.
Can't you remember? Atticus asked.
Mr. Tate pointed to an invisible person 5 inches in front of him and said, Her left.
Wait a minute, Sheriff, said Atticus. Was it her left facing you, or her left looking the same way you were?
Mr. Tate said, Oh, yes, that'd make it her right. It was her right eye, Mr. Finch. I remember now. She was bunged up on that side of her face.
Mr. Tate blinked again, as if something had suddenly been made plain to him.
Then he turned his head and looked around at Tom Robinson. As if by instinct, Tom Robinson raised his head. Something had been made plain to Atticus also, and it brought him to his feet.
Sheriff, please repeat what you said.
It was her right eye, I said.
No.
Atticus walked to the court reporter's desk and bent down to the furiously scribbling hand. It stopped, flicked back the shorthand pad, and the court reporter said, Mr. Finch, I remember now she was bunged up on that side of the face.
Atticus looked up at Mr. Tate.
Which side again, Heck?
The right side, Mr. Finch, but she had more bruises. You want to hear about them?
Atticus seemed to be bordering on another question, but he thought better of it and said, Yes, what were her other injuries? As Mr. Tate answered, Atticus turned and looked at Tom Robinson, as if to say this was something they hadn't bargained for.
Her arms were bruised, and she showed me her neck.
There were definite finger marks on her gullet.
All around her throat? At the back of her neck?
I'd say they were all around, Mr. Finch.
You would?
Yes, sir. She had a small throat. Anybody could have reached around it with...
Just answer the question, yes or no, please, Sheriff, said Atticus dryly, and Mr. Tate fell silent.
Atticus sat down and nodded to the circuit solicitor, who shook his head at the judge, who nodded to Mr. Tate, who rose stiffly and stepped down from the witness stand. Below us, heads turned, feet scraped the floor, babies were shifted to shoulders, and a few children scampered out of the courtroom. The Negroes behind us whispered softly among themselves. Dill was asking Reverend Sykes what it was all about, but Reverend Sykes said he didn't know. So far, things were utterly dull. Nobody had thundered. There were no arguments between opposing counsel. There was no drama. A grave disappointment to all present, it seemed. Atticus was proceeding amiably, as if he were involved in a title dispute. With his infinite capacity for calming turbulent seas, he could make a rape case as dry as a sermon. Gone was the terror in my mind of stale whiskey and barnyard smells, of sleepy-eyed sullen men, of a husky voice calling in the night, Mr. Finch? They gone? Our nightmare had gone with daylight. Everything would come out all right. All the spectators were as relaxed as Judge Taylor, except Jim. His mouth was twisted into a purposeful half-grin, and his eyes happy about. And he said something about corroborating evidence, which made me sure he was showing off.
Robert E. Lee Ewell.
In answer to the clerk's booming voice, a little bantam cock of a man rose and strutted to the stand, the back of his neck reddening at the sound of his name. When he turned around to take the oath, we saw that his face was as red as his neck. We also saw no resemblance to his namesake. A shock of wispy, new-washed hair stood up from his forehead. His nose was thin, pointed, and shiny.
He had no chin to speak of. It seemed to be a part of his crepey neck.
"So help me God," he crowed.
Every town the size of Macomb had families like the Yules. No economic fluctuations changed their status. People like the Yules lived as guests of the county in prosperity as well as in the depths of a depression. No truant officers could keep their numerous offspring in school. No public health officer could free them from congenital defects, various worms, and the diseases indigenous to filthy surroundings.